well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you once again behind the microphone. And we are once again going to be flashing back to the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia today. You're going to be hearing from Josh Savati, who is the head of NRA's general operations, as well as JP Carter, who is the head of the NRA's Office of Advancement. Both very critical roles here. You know, we spoke with Doug Hamlin, the executive vice president and CEO of the NRA, reelected, by the way, as the CEO and EVP during the board meetings on Monday. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But, you know, one of the things that Doug talked about was the rebuilding of the not just the political side of NRA, but the operations side, right? The competitive shooting, the training, all of the other departments that do not fall under the auspices of the Institute for Legislative Action. And Josh Savani, who spent most of his career at the NRA within ILA, is now head of the General Operations Division. And then, of course, if you're talking about rebuilding the NRA, you are also talking about rebuilding those relationships with donors. And that's where J.P. Carter comes into play. So we'll get to the, both of those interviews in just a moment or two. But, yeah, we should talk about the NRA board elections. NRA president Bill Bockenberg, elected yesterday, along with the other members of that reform slate that he spoke about when he sat down with us in Atlanta over the weekend. So NRA first vice president, now Mark Vaughn. NRA second vice president, now Rocky Marshall. NRA past president, Bob Barr, who served for a year. Now, these elections happen every year, but typically the officer positions are two-year terms. You don't have to serve 2 years, but that's generally the practice, right? So this was a challenge by Bockenberg to the incumbency of Bob Barr and the NRA board, again, voting in that reform slate during its board meetings on Monday. That is big news because this now means that reformers really are, I think, in the driver's seat. For the National Rifle Association, those who are hoping to see some institutional reforms take place in terms of transparency and accountability, I think now have all of the pieces that they want to make that happen. So this is, I think, very good news for the organization going forward in the future. And it does mark, I think, really, you know, NRA 2.0, if you want to call it that. I think that process has been underway for a couple of years, but I think this election result shows that NRA 2.0 has been solidified, right? Where they go from here, I think, is up not only to those officers, but up to the NRA members as well. And I can tell you, if you're an NRA member, you can play a crucial role in this. You know, there were, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people on hand in Atlanta for the annual meetings last weekend. One of the things that some members got to do was vote on the 76th board member. That serves as a one-year term. Elections are held during the annual meetings. So you have to be, I believe, a member in good standing for, I think it's at least 5 years, or an NRA life member in order to be eligible to vote. So not everybody who attended in Atlanta would have been eligible to vote for that 76th board member. But conservatively, I think it's fair to say that, again, tens of thousands of attendees were eligible to cast their vote. And there were less than 1,000 votes cast. The 76th board member, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name right now, won, I think, with 389 votes. The second place finisher, Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, had 180-some-odd votes. I mean, that tells you something, right? A lot of NRA rank-and-file members, even life members, really don't pay attention to the process. And in fact, we're going to be talking about that on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company with Jackie Emsley, who is a longtime NRA volunteer. Her husband, Scott Emsley, elected to the NRA board as a reform candidate this year. And when I had a chance to sit down with Jackie, she talked about the importance of showing up. Not only, and she was speaking specifically about in terms of Second Amendment advocacy, but I would say in terms of, again, helping to shape the direction of the National Rifle Association, being there, being a part of the process really matters. In terms of the overall board elections, I think less than 3% of eligible voters returned a ballot. So if you want to have a say in how the NRA is run, if you want to have a hand in these efforts to reform, the best thing you can do is get involved. Sitting on the couch and complaining, I mean, you know, yeah, it might satisfy your emotional needs, but it's not going to have any sort of impact beyond you and your thinking. If you want to actually make a difference in the NRA's present and its future, yeah, you got to show up. So with that in mind, let's kick off the conversation, starting with Josh Havani, the head of NRA General Operations. I promise, by the way, that as we continue our coverage of the NRA annual meetings, you're not just going to be hearing from NRA employees or staff or officers. We've got a lot of folks to talk with in the coming days. But in light of the elections, I figured it was appropriate to have one more day that was NRA-centric from the NRA annual meetings. And let's kick off things with our conversation with Josh Havani, head of NRA General Operations.
Welcome back to our coverage from the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. Apologies, I feel like a chipmunk. Mark Walters just gave me a piece of hard candy here, and I've got a wedge in my cheek. Well, we were talking with Josh Savini, who is the head of general operations at the National Rifle Association. Josh, thank you so much for sitting down and spending some time with us, man.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Cam. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
Happy to be here. Actually, the show's going pretty well so far, so I'm...
Knock on wood, right? It's day one.
Yeah.
But it is. This is off to a really good start.
And day one is usually, you know, Fridays are a tougher day for us. We don't get as many of the day trippers that come in on Saturdays and stuff. So hopefully we see our normal Friday to Saturday jump. We'll have a, you know, pretty busy show tomorrow as well.
Absolutely. So speaking of busy, you've got to be incredibly busy because, like, this fall, this is one of your babies. This is your baby, right?
And it's a big change for me. I, you know, a little background for me. I worked 15 years in ILA. I was started as an intern, actually. Got an internship by shooting an IDK match, you know. Not the most common law school networking's way to get a job. But yeah, started in ILA, worked there for a long time. And then as of last December, I've been running GO. So yeah, shows and exhibits is a huge part of that. We have this show, Great American Outdoor Show, big shows to produce every year. We have competitions. Just launched a new competition last week, or relaunched actually, but really trying to drive a lot of, you know, growth in our modern competitions. Mm-hmm. We've had our traditional ones. We have the new America's Rifle Challenge, call it ARC. Started that last week with a kind of a test match, try to get it going. I think we worked out all the kinks we need to, and we're going to really start pushing that out to clubs. So America's Rifle Challenge, if you go to arc.nra.org, that's where you can learn a whole lot more about that, show your interest, let your club, you know, local club, so to shoot it. It's AR based match, more modern. There's two different levels. One is a little more of a beginner friendly match on a certain range to let people that are newer to competitive shooting or have never shot a competition in their entire life get more comfortable in that kind of environment. And then we have a level two match that is more of your traditional, more like IDK, USPSA, shot and based, but with an AR. And then that also stretches out, you know, a long range deal out to 400 or 500 yards.
Cool. I like the fact, by the way, that you do have that sort of introduction to competitive shooting, right? Because we know we've got a lot of new gun owners over the past few years. And, you know, just as sometimes people are, they're a little hesitant, they're a little trepidatious about going into a gun store if they've never gone in, right? Like, how am I going to be received? Am I going to, you know, are they going to make fun of me because I don't know what I'm doing? I think there's that same concern about competitive shooting. Like, a lot of people would like to do this, but they don't want to look like the complete newbie, right? They don't want to be. But if there is that sort of, okay, you know what, everybody else is at that same skill level, that all of a sudden makes it way more inviting and way more available, I think, for people, which is the goal, right? We want to get more people.
That's the mission of an association, is to get people to associate together, right?
Yeah.
Ours is Second Amendment Association. We want to get people to associate, you know, shoot matches, find clubs, you know, get out on ranges, go hunting. That's what our association's about. And so I think that level one match is somewhat unique in that it's an easier step, you know, dip the toes into competitive shooting for a lot of people. You know, we have millions of AR owners now, and right, they have a place to go try something that's not quite as intimidating as, you know, getting into multi-gun or, you know, three-gun or two-gun.
Yeah. So general operations is basically everything but the political side of things, right?
From an operations side, you know, you have membership and, you know, fundraising stuff is kind of separate, but from actual operations, it's
point
yeah, right. Programs and operations, we have two sides. We have ILA that does the political stuff, and then all the non-political stuff falls under GO.
So with coming from your background in Iowa, did you have, you know, not hands-on experience necessarily with the general operations side? Were you aware of everything that, that GEO did?
Not everything.
No?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're always finding out new little details of all of our programs. But I, you know, I have a background. I'm a competitive shooter, a hunter, and, you know, I've helped run ranges. So I have a lot of experience doing that stuff. And that was kind of why I thought, always thought it was a good fit. I've actually, you know, on that ARC match, we first started working on that project when I was an intern in Isla. And because of my experience as a competitive shooter, I kind of got brought in into that program. So it was, you know, I've always just been working on, I like all the stuff that NRA does.
Yeah.
It's a, you know.
What are your goals for general operations over, let's say, the next 12 to 24 months?
So number one, we have to rebuild our clubs and associations. You know, during COVID, a lot of clubs weren't operating. And so our clubs and associations department kind of shrunk because of that. And we lost a lot of staff and we lost a lot. And then through that, when clubs started opening again, we lost some, a lot of them as affiliated clubs. Just say, you know, we really need to build back. We need to have better service for those clubs because we didn't have a big team in our clubs associations department. And so we're going to be, that's a big project for this year, is kind of rebuilding that team, finding new staff to fill those roles and to recruit some of the clubs, you know, they've lost back, and hopefully a lot of new players too.
Yeah.
Just like we're trying to recruit members, we're always trying to recruit members we lost and new members. We got to do the same thing with clubs. And just let them know all the benefits that we offer for them. You know, the big one for clubs is getting access to the insurance programs that you get as an affiliated club. It's often hard for clubs to find, you know, to find insurance.
Yeah.
And then, but we also offer, you know, we have our whole range of services team that helps ranges when they, you know,
if they need to understand how to better develop their range. That's really neat.
Yeah. And this is, I don't know if it's a growing issue, but it is a continued issue, I guess, around the country. You know, I cover stories all the time where it's either, you know, a gun club that's been in existence for decades, and all of a sudden new neighbors come in and they want to try to shut it down, building out a new range. Nobody wants it in the backyard, right, or even a mile away. You know, it is challenging because if we don't have access to these ranges, I mean, I think it's a choke point for gun control activists. I mean, we're seeing this, you know, the new standard is every time you have any sort of permit, we're going to put a live fire requirement in there, right? And so if you don't have access to ranges, all of a sudden becomes that much more difficult to exercise your Second Amendment rights. But then also, we want people to be responsible gun owners. We want people to be well-trained, well, you know, the original meaning of well-regulated, right? So for that,
absolutely.
So you do have to have those places where you can safely shoot. Is that something that is a challenge, you think, for not just clubs, but for the Second Amendment community in general?
I mean, that's one of the biggest things, is we have to make sure that we have, you know, to protect the Second Amendment into the future. It doesn't matter how good of a job Isla does. There's nowhere to shoot. There's no hunting lands to hunt on, no competitions to shoot in. It's going to be a pretty hollow riot, you know? So that's really important, especially when it comes to ranges. Like I said, the noise issue can become an issue, and the area around the ranch starts to become a little more populated.
Right.
Isla's done a lot of good work over the last 30 years with their range protection laws, so that, you know, whatever noise rules existed at the time the range started operating, those are the noise rules that can, you know, that they have to abide by. You can't change the law to try to force the range out. But yeah, we also in GEO try to help them to operate as safely as possible, because, you know, one of the biggest problems for ranges is if a projectile leaves that range, that's a potential liability, right? And so, yeah, trying to help those rangers understand how to best operate in a safe manner is a lot of what our range services team does.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know that this is an incredibly busy weekend for you, Josh. I do appreciate you carving out a couple of minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd love to have you back on Cam & Company when we get back to Virginia.
Sure.
But, again, congratulations on the... Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on being the Executive Director of General Operations. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
And thanks to Josh for sitting down with us for a few minutes over the weekend. Also, again, JP Carter, head of NRA's Office of Advancement, had the opportunity to chat with JP both in front of a microphone and then just on a couple of occasions over the course of the weekend. Great guy. We were talking history. We were talking American Revolution battlefields, the Southern Campaign, General Nathaniel Greene. Like, we geeked out. It was actually really cool. So I got to say, I really enjoyed the time that I had to spend with JP Carter, both again for the formal interviews, in the formal interview that you're about to hear and see, as well as just those, you know, off the cuff conversations. A very bright guy, very passionate guy, and someone who I think is committed to seeing the NRA succeed in the future.
So continuing our coverage here from the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia, I am very pleased to have with us the NRA's Director of the Office of Advancement, J.P. Carter. J.P., how you doing, sir?
Hey, Cam. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate you taking some time to meet with me. And, you know, as I mentioned, this is really exciting for me. I've never been on a podcast before, so I'm excited to talk about a little bit what we're doing at the Office of Advancement. And I'm still came back to the NRA about 9 months ago. So as you mentioned, I'm the executive director of the Office of Advancement.
You said you came back to the NRA.
That's correct.
All right. So what were you doing before you left the NRA?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So so my first career was in the United States Marine Corps. I served in the Marine Corps for about 10 years. I was an infantry officer, honor of my life to get to lead and serve Marines. And when I came out of the Marine Corps, I actually started at the National Rifle Association in the Publications Division. So I started there. I went back to school for a little bit of time, and then always been an operations guy by trade. So I went into manufacturing after a couple of years at the NRA. From there, I started my own company. So I owned my own company for about 5 years. It's an operational excellence firm and kind of industry agnostic. We support all different size and types of organizations as they really look to just be very action-oriented and improve processes. So from the military on, you kind of develop a natural skill set for processes.
Yeah.
And so it creates a good, a natural transition to helping companies, both small and large, just really reinforce the need for processes as they look to scale. So that's my background. And then, got the opportunity this summer. A phone call came in, asked if I wanted to join the executive team and help lead the organization. And my wife, Kristen, and I talked about it for a very brief period of time. It did not take long for us to figure out that we wanted to come home to the NRA. And I tell everybody that I meet and I get to talk to is that at the end of the day, the time is your most important value, your asset, and it's where do you want to spend it? And when I was in the Marine Corps, I got to spend it with Marines who shared, like values and a sense of purpose. You don't always get that outside of the military, but I tell you that in this community, in the Second Amendment community, you absolutely get it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, so, if I don't mind, I listened to your podcast on the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord. I know you were there with our CEO, Dr. Hamlin, last weekend.
Yep.
And it's those type of stories. It's listening to the leadership of Volt and hearing them talk about how they found their identity within this community. So it's kind of what brought me home to the NRA.
That's awesome. And so the Office of Advancement, what give us the 30-second elevator pitch on what you do on a daily basis.
Absolutely. So the bottom line is we're the fundraising operation for the National Rifle Association.
Okay.
We oversee a variety of different types of fundraising. We have what we call our major gifts, which is our individual donor relationships, where we do fundraising operations all the way over to our field operations, which is what many people are familiar with, which is the Friends of NRA program. The Friends of NRA program raises money through banquet-style events that support the NRA Foundation. And then through the NRA Foundation, we fund the NRA's general operations. This is where we fund programs like Eddie Eagle, Refuse to Be a Victim, Women on Target, Youth Safety, Hunter Education, all of those programs that the NRA does, really our core competencies, that's funded through our events with the Friends of NRA program. So all of that kind of rolls up into the Office of Advancement.
Okay. So, we've been talking with a lot of NRA officers. Doug Hamlin's been, very open and honest about the job of rebuilding the NRA, regaining the trust of members. How do you see your role in that, JP?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I can tell you that, we're following Doug's lead, and Doug, we are working every day, and we're excited to do it, and we're happy to do it. It's a sense of duty for us. And I think the most important thing for the Office of Advancement, it's that it's not just fundraising, right? I mean, I mentioned I'm an ops guy by trade. My background is how do we really start, or how do we raise money, but then be integrated to the organization so we can help us strategically deploy the resources to then be that sort of investment pipeline for the organization, if that makes sense. So really, not just raising money, but when we go out and we're sitting with donors, we're talking about what we're doing as an organization. We're talking about our goals and initiatives and how we want to bring those resources in. No different than the way we would talk to an investor, because quite frankly, I don't look at it as a donor, whether you're coming to a friend's banquet or you are sitting down with one of our advancement officers. You're an investor. You're an investor, and you're looking for a return on your investment. And to some folks, it's different. Some folks, we've got, you know, they want wins in Isla, and we win in Isla. And other folks, you know, they're looking to support freedom through our programs, through teaching freedom, through our youth education summit, which hands down, I think is one of the best programs we have. You know, we bring high school students from across the country every summer to NRA headquarters. We take them around. We teach them. I mean, to me, that is really the hands-on opportunity to teach freedom and send these young ambassadors back to their communities.
Yeah, it is a great program. It really, truly is. And that's the thing. I mean, there are so many great things. And we talk about, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Isla, celebrating 50 years. But, you know, the general op side of things, as you say, the programs, whether it's competitive shooting sports, disabled shooting sports, whether it's, again, Youth Education Summit, there are so many things, you know, that do advance the cause of freedom, help to preserve that liberty, right? And again, keep it going for generations to come. So yeah, absolutely, litigation is important. Legislation is important. But so is building that culture of respect for the Second Amendment and respect for, quite frankly, all of the freedoms that we have.
You're absolutely right. And it's, you know, we like to say, you know, it's trigger time, right? We want to get fingers on triggers. We have a lot of great field reps in our Friends of NRA program, and you'll hear them say that all the time. But one of the things I look at it as is it's culture. It's a mentorship opportunity. I have three small kids, and something that my wife told me that really hit home when our kids, still very small, but when they were a little bit younger, so we're training our replacements.
Right.
And when you really think about it like that, and that doesn't happen overnight, and it's not just go into the range. It's more about interacting with the people at the range and hearing stories and learning history that, you know, just like, you know, we go to school and we learn in school, we learn sort of the, you know, the things that are the staple items, but it's through the communications at events like the GOAL event in Massachusetts and really understanding. And those are the opportunities that we have to continue. As you said, that's what's woven into the fabric of this country. That's how we continue to pass it down.
Yep.
And it's really shooting is the environment to congregate people, to get the conversation going and to do it continuously.
Absolutely. Well, JP, listen, man, I really appreciate all you're doing for helping that conversation move forward, helping to keep our liberties intact. Got to tell you, man, first time doing a podcast, you did great.
Well, I appreciate it. You made it super easy for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. JP Carter joining us here at the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia.
Thanks to JP. Thanks to Josh. And again, tomorrow, I think we're going to share with you Jackie Emsley, conversation I had with the longtime NRA activist. And I'm just looking here over my extensive interviews. I think maybe Ryan Petty will be the second interview that we share with you tomorrow. Maybe I might save Ryan. I spoke with a gentleman named Barry Todd, had a fascinating conversation. He was someone who had to act in self-defense and suffered the legal consequences of that. He's written a book about it. So maybe we'll save Ryan for Thursday. And maybe we'll do Jackie and Barry on tomorrow's show. I don't know. But we'll have a couple of interviews for you from the NRA annual meeting. Right now, the listener, our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of Las Vegas. And here's the headline. Las Vegas man who stabbed victim up to 40 times sentenced to probation. What on earth is happening? Gentleman's name is Dylan Mills. And he indeed stabbed someone dozens of times in August of 2023. He was originally facing attempted murder charges, but those charges later downgraded to a battery with use of a deadly weapon. And back in March, Mills pleaded guilty but mentally ill. Now he is on probation for 5 years. If he violates the terms of his probation, he could face up to 12 years in prison. I say up to, because that is far from guaranteed. Judge Daniel Piper said, when I first saw this and I read the pre-sentence investigation report, I agree it was a pretty violent case. But because I've worked with both of the parties standing in front of me, I'm going to trust their judgment. So the state and the defense attorney for Mr. Immels, agreed to a term that would allow him to serve out his sentence while focusing on his mental health. Immels' attorney, Joshua Tomczyk, released a statement to a Fox 5 in Las Vegas and says, well, on the surface, this is an uncommon resolution in a case with these types of charges. It was a specifically tailored negotiation given the unique circumstances of Dylan and his situation. This case is the result of a mental health crisis involving an individual who's off his medication through no fault of his own. Dylan is not by nature a criminal or a violent person. This sentence, which was carefully crafted and agreed upon by the parties and imposed by the court, allows for long-term monitoring of Dylan, his mental health, and his ongoing care. He will be on an extended period of probation with specifically tailored requirements, which are given to those of a mental health specialty court. Through this resolution, he will receive the treatment that he needs and the education and oversight to ensure that there are no issues in the future. I certainly hope that that is the case. I will say that my concern, and look, we talk a lot about mental health here on this program. And if the state of Nevada, specifically Clark County, accepted that Dylan Immels was not in his right mind when he engaged in this wanton act of violence in August of 2023, okay, I don't know all of the facts of this case, so I will accept their judgment. My biggest concern here is that we've said Mr. Immels, when he's off his medication, is somebody who can become so dangerous that others are at risk, clearly, right? I'm not sure that being out on probation, despite all of the claims that he's going to be monitored, is really going to be all that effective. We just talked yesterday about what's going on in LA County, where the probation office is so woefully understaffed. You've basically got one probation officer for every 800 people on probation. Now, that's LA County, right? It's not Clark County. But Nevada has its own issues. In fact, Fox 5 had previously covered Dylan Immels' situation. This was last year as part of a story about Clark County inmates who've been deemed mentally incompetent, left in jail cells with no access to treatment for over 100 days. In Dylan Immels' case, when this story was published in March of 2024, I think he had been behind bars waiting for care to begin for something like 124 days. Now, you could argue that that maybe proves the point that behind bars is not where Dylan Immels needs to be, that he would be better off on probation. And if that is the case, then to me, it demonstrates the broken mental health system within the Department of Corrections in the state of Nevada. If you're telling me that it's better off that somebody who becomes violent when they're off their meds is out on the street rather than incarcerated because or confined, I said, let's say confined to a mental health facility where he can be monitored 24/7 for a period of time. You're telling me that putting him back on the streets is the better option because the state doesn't have the resources to adequately address or treat somebody like Dylan Immels. Well, that's a problem in and of itself, isn't it? It's not Mr. Immels' fault. Maybe we can take a look at the Democrats who control the state legislature and ask what the hell they're doing to ensure that dangerous people are not returned to the streets. But I am concerned that this is... according to the prosecutors, I understand, I get the defense attorney's point of view that this is the best outcome for his client. But I'm very concerned that the state of Nevada apparently agrees that the best place for Dylan Immels is amongst the general public rather than under intensive inpatient supervision, at least for some period of time. To ensure that this doesn't happen again. Now, on to today's armed citizen story from Houston, Texas. We don't have a lot of information here, but we do know the most important thing. And, you know, I have said this many times before. I will say it again now. Being a gun owner, that doesn't indemnify you from harm. Carrying a firearm doesn't guarantee that you, A, won't be targeted by violent criminals, or B, that you will be successful at protecting yourself. I think it gives you the opportunity, hopefully, to protect yourself and others. And in this case, it sounds like a gun owner in Houston, lost his life, but may very well have saved his wife's life in confronting two individuals who invaded his home, their home, late Monday night. According to the authorities in Houston, they believe that the homeowner was being watched, and then the suspects actually followed him home. It was about 10 o'clock Monday night. These two suspects kicked down the back door of the home. The homeowner was in the garage area, had probably just pulled in, and there was a shootout. The homeowner, tragically, was shot and killed. But his wife, who was upstairs, heard the noise, called 911, and the suspects, not wanting to stick around the scene of the crime, took off. They did not go into the home. They did not apparently try to steal a bunch of stuff. They did not find the wife. If the homeowner had not been armed, if the homeowner had not been willing to protect himself and his family with a firearm, he may very well have still been killed or tied up. Wife found upstairs. Lord knows what would have happened. Again, this is an absolute tragedy. There's no information on these suspects, by the way, because, again, they were gone by the time police arrived. And I sure wish that this story had a different outcome. I really do. But in losing his life, I do believe that this homeowner may very well have saved the lives of the others in the home, including his wife, who was upstairs, who heard those gunshots and called police. Again, it's a tragic story. It's a tragic situation. I hope we learn more about this individual who, again, acted so heroically. But I wanted to bring it to your attention today, even though we don't have many of those details yet. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A teen from New York who saved a kayaker in the water in the state of Florida while he was on vacation. Brody Kaufman of Clarence, New York, 17 years old. He is a junior firefighter with a volunteer fire company there in Clarence, New York. He was in a car with his sister. His parents stepped out to check out some wildlife, and they sent him a text that a guy had fallen into the water. Coffin says they texted me and said that they saw a tarpon feeding, and then a few seconds later they said somebody fell into the water and they might have to call 911. So Coffin got out of the car, ran over, saw a guy who was trying to hold on to his kayak, apparently had let go or lost his grip and then was struggling to stay afloat. Coffin says his friends couldn't get back to him because of the current, and he just started drifting. Katie Kaufman, who's Brody's mom, says that her son didn't waste any time, just ran right over to the guy, started doing what he does. He actually ran over to some fishermen who were nearby and said, "Do you have any rope?" He said one fisherman actually did have some. He said, "So I threw it out, tried to yell instructions on how to tie it around himself." Said another fisherman gave me a rope with a carabiner clip, which he clipped to his life jacket. Brody said at one point the man let go of two ropes, leaving only the rope that was clipped to his life preserver, which was kind of loose on him. He said, "That's when I thought I could take a turn for the worse." He said, "If I don't step in, he's going to get thrown out to sea with a life jacket that's too big. He would have been swept under with the current, and he would not have had a chance." But Brody and those fishermen were able to pull the man to shore. Brody's dad, Matt, says that Brody kind of led the charge. He said, "Hey, this is what we need to do." And he led the other fishermen, asked him to get ropes. And when they got those ropes, he just really took charge from there as far as the rescue effort, talking to the young individual that we were trying to rescue, giving him instructions, trying to get him to tie things onto his jacket. He said he really coordinated the whole rescue effort as a 17-year-old. Brody says they pulled the man up about 50 feet. So when they got to the top, he said he threw his rope over, grabbed his arm. Everybody else grabbed his legs, were able to pull him up onto the bridge. And then, wait for first responders to check him out, make sure everything was okay. He said, "Everything that I've seen, everything I've been through, everything I've been taught as part of the Clarence Center Fire Company, said, it was just kind of put all that in my head, and it got me in the correct mindset to help this man." He said, "If nobody was doing anything fast enough, I knew I needed to take charge, and I jumped into action." 17-year-old has been with the Harris Hill Fire Company for about 2 years now. So I'm sure he has been in other life-saving positions before, but off duty, on vacation, but still in the right place at the right time with the right mindset to help a stranger in need. Brody Kaufman, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I am looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow, again with more coverage of the NRA annual meetings in Atlanta. Just a great weekend. A lot of great folks we had the chance to sit down with. And again, you'll hear from a couple more of them on tomorrow's show. Also tomorrow, we do our weekly live chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey for our VIP Gold members coming up at 1:30 Eastern. You can be a part of it. All you have to do, become a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. You can also become a VIP member as well, although you won't have access to the VIP Gold live chats. But you'll still be supporting the Independent Pro Segment of Journalism we do at Bearing Arms. So whatever level of support you choose, use the promo code FIGHT. Get 60% off of your savings or off of your membership. Either a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. All kinds of great benefits, including that live chat. And we certainly do appreciate your support. You can check out more at BearingArms.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.